And welcome to a late edition of 360. Joining us to talk about what you just heard, CNN Chief Political Correspondent Dana Bash joins me, CNN Senior Political Correspondent Abby Phillips, CNN Political Commentator and one-time campaign advisor to the former President David Urban, also conservative radio host Eric Erickson. Dana, I'm wondering what you made of the former vice president tonight.
He is trying to walk the finest of fine lines, Anderson, by distancing himself, criticizing the former president for what happened in the run-up to, and especially on January 6th, not just for the country, but for him and his family personally, but then embracing all of the policies that he believes will serve the country well from his perspective, but more importantly for his political future, will serve him well if he does, in fact, decide to run, even though he wouldn't go there quite yet with Jake. So it's for those who are looking for him to express his anger and not just say his anger, and there is a difference, you're not going to get that from Mike Pence. It's just not who he is. For those who are looking for somebody to embrace the former president more than he did, you're also not going to get that. So the question is, who is out there, who he is going to appeal to? Because when you talk about Trump, there are very polarizing ideas and perspectives.
David, can you even imagine what it looks like Mike Pence on a debate stage with the former president? I mean, the pacing, the pauses, everything.
Yeah, so say to say it'd be awkward is probably an understatement, but just, you know, you're if America's looking for, you know, if this still matters, if being a kind, decent, good human being still matters in national politics, then Mike Pence will be a contender, right? And because what you just heard from Jake Tapper in the interview there, and listen, I applaud CNN for taking the whole thing and doing the town hall, and for the vice president for showing up. I think it's important for Americans to hear this. But, you know, he has a tough road to hoe because, you know, I disagree with one of the things he said at the end. You know, politics is about animating the base, right? And animating people. And, you know, he made a kind of a joke about it at the end and said, if you want a big crowd, send Donald Trump. If you want a small crowd, send Mike Pence. And I think that's going to be his challenge, is getting the base and Republican voters animated. I think Mike Pence is an incredibly good, decent, kind human being, but it's going to be hard to fire up the base and animate them after, you know, after 4 years of a Trump administration.
And Abby, I mean, to Dana's point about walking a fine line, I don't know if it's a razor's edge fine. It doesn't really, I mean, does it please anybody? Because, I mean, he's not winning over people who like the former president necessarily, and not really even castigating the former president particularly hard that might bring him some support from people who have turned against the former president.
I was struck by exactly the same thing, Anderson. You know, I keep thinking back to when he was talking about, after January 6th, talking to Trump about what his former boss had put him through on that day. And he basically went out of his way to say that he thought that Trump was remorseful, provided really no evidence to suggest that, but really leaned into this idea that that Trump really didn't mean it in some ways. And I thought that was really emblematic of Mike Pence. I mean, I think that for the people who love Pence, it's perhaps a sign that he is a good and decent person, that he's forgiving, he's a person of faith. But for folks who are looking for Pence to express a statement of principles, even on something like that, where he and his family were put in danger, where his former boss was doing something that he described as reckless, but other people have described as anti-democratic, he wouldn't even go there to sort of express broad statements of principle about why what Trump did was wrong, and also even a little bit of outrage, I think. It's hard for him because I think that is generally, I covered Pence for the duration of the Trump-Pence presidency. This is generally who he is. But I think that for the American public, it's going to be hard for him to really gin up a lot of sort of enthusiasm on either side of this divide within the Republican Party.
Yeah, Eric, I mean, to Abby's point, I want to play the moment where Vice President Pence addressed what happened on January 6th.
Take a look at the video over here. That, of course, was the news hanging outside the Capitol that day, and rioters were calling for your execution, chanting, "Hang Mike Pence." almost 2 years later, is it still tough to, there's some of the video of the hang Mike Pence, 2 years later, is it still tough to see that and hear that?
Jake, it saddens me. But that day it angered me. I must tell you, when the Secret Service took us down to the loading dock, accompanied by my wife and my daughter Charlotte and our Secret Service detail, I was determined to stay at my post. I told the Secret Service that I was not leaving the Capitol. I didn't want to give those people the sight of a 16-car motorcade speeding away from the Capitol that day. But frankly, when I saw those images, and when I read a tweet that President Trump issued saying that I lacked courage in that moment, it angered me greatly. But to be honest with you, I didn't have time for it. The president had decided in that moment to be a part of the problem.
Eric, I'm wondering just what your takeaways of Mike Pence. I mean, there, it's interesting him sort of describing that from a distance without any emotion or actual feeling about it.
Well, you know, to Dan and Abby's point, that's kind of who he is. He tries to be dispassionate with these things. I've known the man for more than a decade, and his pacing and storytelling like that, this is very much who Mike Pence is. I did think it was interesting when Jake pushed back on him and said, you said the president became part of the problem, but he was the problem. It took the vice president a little while to get to that and to move on there. And that's part of the problem he's going to have is people who like Donald Trump really like Donald Trump, not necessarily Mike Pence. There are a lot of people out there. I was watching social media go through as the town hall was going on, people who are very upset with him for not being forceful. That's not who he is. He's not the kind of iconoclast that a lot of people expect in politics these days. He really is, David's point, just a very nice, humble, good Christian man. And he's going to have to find a way to gravitate more than just an evangelical base if he wanted to run for president and find some way to express some level of indignity about what happened for a lot of voters who are still mad about it.
Dana, we have that sound that Eric just mentioned where former Vice President Pence was asked about former President Trump's role on January 6th. Let's play that.
You just said that the president in that moment decided to be part of the problem. And I have to say, as somebody that had been reporting on it for the months leading up to January 6th, I don't think anything happened in that moment that was part of the problem. President Trump had been campaigning in favor of the overturning of the election for months and months and months. It wasn't in that moment, and he wasn't part of the problem. He was the problem.
Well, look, the people that rioted at the Capitol are responsible for what they did. And as I said that day, and I've believed every day since, those people should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law.
It's what's notable. I mean, he never said Trump led those insurrectionists there. Trump's the one who fomented it throughout the town hall. Pence was still not really denouncing Trump. Are you, I mean, if that's the lane he's running in, I mean, is that a lane?
It's hard to see that it's a lane. It's incredibly narrow, which was my takeaway when we started this, which is the people who really want him to show his anger, even and especially when what we're talking about in the short term is the Republican primary electorate. For those who are so angry about what happened, and there are Republican primary voters who are angry about what happened, he's not necessarily showing it. What he's trying to do is say, I did all the good things in the Trump administration when it comes to Republican policies that you all support. And I stood up when the you know what hit the fan and I prevented the Constitution from being completely shredded. But again, when it comes down to culpability, which sounds to me is part of your question, Anderson, he won't go there. Yeah, of course, the people who are at the Capitol are responsible, but they're not the only people responsible. It's the person in the White House for whom he worked who fomented that, who fed them lies and helped to incite what they did.
You know, David, you were on the set with us the other night when Van Jones was talking about one of the things he believes the supporters of Donald Trump believe in is that they are part of a movement. It's not just they like the policies that Donald Trump was espousing, which Mike Pence espoused. It's they are part of something that's deeply connected to Trump, that Trump represents. Mike Pence is not a movement leader. That still seems to remain one of the former president's biggest advantages.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Anderson. That's what I was alluding to. You know, the vice president spoke about that at the end of his at the end of the town hall. They were saying, you know, he kind of made fun of it and said, "Look, if you want a big crowd, send the president. You want a small crowd, send me." Mike Pence, again, very good, decent, kind human being. Not a guy who's going to fill a 10,000 seat stadium with people who are chanting, you know, lock her up, right? That's just not who he is. And he can't be someone he is, and he's authentic. And it's going to be a problem. Like when we're talking about, right, you see the video of him being whisked down the stairs while you can hear shouts outside the Capitol of "Hang Mike Pence," his wife, his daughter, you know, I mean, and you asked what he felt about the president. I would have had some pretty strong words. I would have gotten in the car and driven back to the White House and probably gotten in a fist fight with the president, right? I mean, that's what people are looking for. They're saying like, wow, if that was my wife and family, I'd be back there banging on the desk saying more than, you know, "You let me down, Mr. President." And I think that's the issue. You know, Mike Pence is a decent human being, great guy. I got to spend a lot of time with him. And I think people want to see a little more fire. They want to see someone who's going to stand up and fight hard. And that's what the allure of President Trump was. And I think that's what they see in Ron DeSantis in Florida. I think that's why he's, you know, kind of surging the polls. They see someone who's, you know, kind of a pugilist in the political sense.
Abby, do you think Mike Pence is or can be the future of the Republican Party?
I think it's too early to know, but I mean, for all the reasons that David just described, it's hard. He, in this moment, has a bit of a choice. I think if we look at the results of the midterms last week, there is a constituency in American politics for people who are not election deniers, who are espousing real policy, and perhaps people who are willing to push back on those things. Pence doesn't really want to be that person. He wants to be just distant enough from it that he can't be, called an election denier, but not so distant that he might be perceived as being more in the sort of Liz Cheney vein of the Republican Party. And it's just hard to see who that appeals to. On the other hand, I mean, I do think that the one thing that Ron DeSantis has that is working for him at the moment, although it remains to be seen whether that will work in an actual primary, is that he's picking fights with the other party. Pence won't do that either. It's just hard to see what the lane is. I think this Republican Party of today, frankly, is not particularly all that interested in the nice guy who shows up at the party. And I think that Pence is going to have to deal with that.
Yeah. I'm going to leave it there. Dana Bash, Abby Phillip, David Urban, Eric Erickson, I appreciate it. Thank you. Coming up next, how the missile crisis on the Polish-Ukrainian border was contained and the latest on the investigation to what actually happened. We're joined as well by a retired Army general and former military attaché to Russia. Secretary of Defense Austin today said the U.S. has seen nothing to contradict Poland's assessment that the explosion that killed two near its Ukrainian border was caused by a Ukrainian air defense missile. Ukraine says it's ready to cooperate in the Polish investigation of what happened. But the NATO Secretary General today said that it's not Ukraine's fault and that Russia, quote, bears ultimate responsibility. For Russia's reaction to all this, we turn to CNN senior international correspondent Fred Plykton, who joins us from Moscow. What is the latest from the Kremlin, Fred?
Hi there, Anderson. Well, the Russians clearly are trying to capitalize on all this. They're now calling this a Polish-Ukrainian plot and a provocation on the part of those two countries to try and draw this into a wider conflict between Russia and NATO. It was quite interesting because the spokesman for Russian President Vladimir Putin, Dmitry Peskov, he came out earlier today and he actually praised President Biden's early reaction to this. Of course, President Biden had said that it did appear as though the missile fragments that landed in Poland probably originated from Ukraine and were not fired off by Russia. The Russians are saying that that was obviously the kind of reaction they wanted to see. On the part of the European allies, they called that hysteria and specifically singled out the Poles. The Russians put forward what they called their experts, saying that it was absolutely clear that this was a surface-to-air missile, and even summoned the Polish ambassador to Moscow late last night. He was at the Russian Foreign Ministry, I would say for about 20 minutes, not far from where we are right now at all. And then the Russians also laying into the Ukrainians as well, again, saying that they believe that the Ukrainians and the Poles are trying to draw NATO into a conflict with Russia, Anderson.
Investigators in Poland and the U.S., they're still on the scene.
They certainly are. And you know, it is very possible that we might learn new details of what exactly happened there. The Polish president, of course, he's already come out and he said that it does appear as though that this was a tragic accident, that the Ukrainians essentially were trying to shoot down some sort of Russian projectile that was fired at their infrastructure or at some sort of military facility. Of course, we know that on that day, there were massive Russian airstrikes that took place, mostly with cruise missiles, and that one of those interceptor missiles that the Ukrainians launched probably went astray. But there are still a lot of questions that are open. Did this interceptor hit some sort of Russian projectile and was then maybe diverted to the territory of Poland? Or could there also have been a Russian projectile that was hit and then part of that also landed on Polish territory? A lot of things that are still unclear and certainly more information that could come out, Anderson.
All right, Fred Plaitton, thanks. Earlier today, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley, noted the Ukrainian military's recent successes, also played down the idea that they're near a full victory.
The military task of militarily kicking the Russians physically out of Ukraine is a very difficult task. And it's not going to happen the next couple of weeks unless the Russian army completely collapses, which is unlikely. The probability of that happening anytime soon is not high, militarily.
Joining us now, retired Brigadier General Peter Zwack, who was the U.S. defense attaché to Russia during its 2014 invasion of Ukraine. He's also author of Swimming the Volga, a U.S. Army Officer's Experiences in Pre-Putin Russia. General Zwack, do you agree with General Milley about the difficulty of the Ukrainian army actually pushing Russian forces fully out?
It's going to be a hard fight, and the Ukrainians are going to press. They have momentum. They sense, and I think we would agree, that if the Russians are able to stop, set, reorganize, it will even be a harder fight. Of course, we've got winter coming that works both for and against both sides. So, yes, it will be hard. The Russians are falling back on what we call a little bit interior lines, closer to the supply routes. But winter for Russian forces in Ukraine will be harder, I believe, for them than the Ukrainians, because Ukrainians are fighting on their home ground. Right. Those Russian troops are going to be out there fighting, unpopular and really cold.
The fighting will likely slow down during the winter, right? Just logistically, I mean, just the elements make it that much more difficult.
Well, that's right. The one point to make on that, though, that tracked vehicles and some wheeled can really, really motor now off the roads. Hmm. The front extends now. A lot of the fighting has been sort of linear along what we call, you know, military, if you will, lines of operation. Hmm. They can move faster now. What they call general mud. That period is passing. Huh. But now you're going to get to general winter. And this will be, people talk about Russian prowess in the winter. Ukrainians can fight in winter too.
Huh. So you think you think it affects Russia, the winter affects Russia more because Ukraine is fighting on their own territory?
I think it's very important. Same ground, World War II, you had German and Soviet forces fighting over villages and towns just to stay warm. And for the hearth, and the Ukrainians are fighting in a generally friendly, populated area. We thought it was hard for the Russians with their supply lines out in front of Kyiv and elsewhere. It's going to get really hard for them, especially in the south, where they still are extended. It's going to be a tough fight, though, without a doubt.
General Zwack, it's always a pleasure. Appreciate it.
Pleasure's mine.
Coming up, giving new details on the investigation from law enforcement into the fatal stabbings of four University of Idaho students as they continue to search for a suspect. To the latest next. We have new information tonight in the investigation of the fatal stabbings of four University of Idaho students. The local police chief says they can't assure the community is safe as they continue the search for the suspect. The students were found dead Sunday in an off-campus home. Police chief also revealing for the first time that two other roommates were home at the time of the killings. He says they were not injured or held hostage. More now from CNN's Lucy Kafanov.
We do not have a suspect at this time, and that individual is still out there. We cannot say that there's no threat to the community.
Tonight, with a killer on the loose, police in Moscow, Idaho, trying to calm a community on edge, shaken by the brutal killings of four young students.
But the reality is there's still a person out there who committed four horrible, horrible crimes. So I think we got to go back to there is a threat out there still.
The students' bodies were found inside this home across from the University of Idaho campus Sunday. Police say two were at a party on campus, while two others were at a downtown bar. All returned home sometime before 1:45 a.m. What happened after remains a mystery.
The four were stabbed with a knife, but no weapon has been located at this time. There was no sign of forced entry into the residence. We're not 100% sure if the door was unlocked, but there was no damage to anything, and the door was still open when we got there.
The coroner describing a gruesome scene.
There was quite a bit of blood in the apartment, and, you know, it was a pretty traumatic scene to find four dead college students in a residence.
The victims, all members of Greek life on campus, appear to have been friends, pictured in this photo posted by 21-year-old Kaylee Goncalves hours before their death. The caption, "One lucky girl to be surrounded by these people every day." Kaylee was killed alongside 20-year-old Zana Kernodal, a junior majoring in marketing, 21-year-old Madison Mogan, a senior also majoring in marketing, and 20-year-old recreation, sport, and tourism management major Ethan Chapin. The university president visibly shaken.
First, my deepest condolences to the families and friends of Ethan, Kaylee, Zana, and Madison. Excuse me. Their loss has been devastating, and they were bright lights in our community.
We're just trying to process it. It's not a call that you think that you're going to have to speak with the funeral home directors and the FBI and have it hit national news.
The families who should have been planning Thanksgiving dinner now making funeral arrangements while demanding answers and justice.
And Lucy Kafanov joins us now. Are authorities saying anything about a possible motive? The mayor raised one possibility. What's the latest?
Yeah, I mean, the police chief was asked about comments made by the Moscow mayor earlier this week describing the killings as a crime of passion. The chief today refusing to speculate about any motive, saying the authorities are continuing to investigate. And of course, look, there are times when investigators have to keep cards close to their chest, but students and families have expressed frustration with just how little they've heard from authorities, especially given that police today walked back previous assurances that there was no threat to the community. The father of Ethan Chapin issuing a statement saying, quote, quote, "There is a lack of information from the university and the local police, which only fuels false rumors and innuendo in the press and social media." Something that the chief actually alluded to today when he said he probably should have had this press conference earlier in the week. And at the end of the day, Anderson, someone brutally killed four people with a knife, and that person has not been caught. The community still waiting for answers. Anderson?
Lucy Kafanov, I appreciate it. Thank you. The news continues. Laura Coates and CNN Tonight right after a quick break.
Now streaming exclusively on Max, a new CNN flash doc about the album that has Nashville talking, Call Me Country, Beyonce and Nashville's Renaissance. Watch it at max.com/callmecountry. Max subscription required.